This week on Art of the Air features two local theater directors, both sharing their career journeys. First, the newly reappointed executive director of the Memorial Opera House, Scott P.J. McDonald, and next, the new artistic director for Toll Theater, Deanne Stover. Our spotlight's on LaPorte County Symphony's 52nd season opener with a vibrant musical tribute to Latin American music and the Day of the Dead with executive director Emily Yanis.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight from the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra, the executive director, Emily Yanis, and she's going to tell us all about their upcoming, actually their 52nd season opener, the vibrant tribute to Latin American music and the Day of the Dead. Emily, welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Always glad to have you on. Well, tell us about the first concert. You know, you just wrapped up Hoosier Star and the Drayton concerts, and briefly just tell us how those went.
Yeah. Oh, just fabulous. Hoosier Star was awesome as usual. We have two very awesome, talented winners who will be performing their pieces at our summer concert next year in Friendship Gardens, and then again next fall at next year's Hoosier Star. I always say it's like they've won a pageant or their Miss America. They have their winners tour now. As they hold the title for the next year, yeah.
And how many people did you have audition initially?
About 65.
Wow.
65 people, yeah, for those 10 spots. So the numbers seem to grow every year.
And the turnout for the Drayton concert, how'd you do on that?
Yes, fabulous. Over 5,000 for the three concerts, and just so fun to see the kids get excited about classical music and orchestral music.
So tell us about the upcoming concert, your season opener on November 2nd.
Yeah, we're very excited about this one. It falls on the Mexican holiday Dia de los Muertos, so we were super excited to bring this program to the region, some pieces that Dr. Watson has been wanting to do for a long time. One of which is Rodrigo's Guitar Concerto. It's kind of the classical guitar concerto in the repertoire. And we have a fabulous guitar soloist coming in. His name is Guido Sanchez Portuguez. He is a professor at the University of Illinois, a professor of guitar. He's from Costa Rica, and he will be coming to play that that title solo. So that's going to be really exciting.
Anything else surrounding this concert that your guests can expect?
Yes. So we have a fabulous ballet troupe, Ballet Folklorico Yurtson. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly. they are coming from East Chicago to do some dancing at 6:15 p.m. pre-concert. They'll be dancing. And then we also have the Hispanic Heritage Group from Purdue Northwest is going to be hosting some activities pre-concert. So we're really excited to be working with them to bring the full experience to this concert.
Now, season subscriptions are, people can still get those, correct?
They still can, yes. Yes, we have our fashionably late subscribers. So we'll have information about that at the concert itself. You can still subscribe for the final three concerts of the season, February, March, April. And so you'll still receive a little bit of a discount there on if you buy all three concerts.
And of course, you have single seats available also.
Plenty of single seats available. That's right. Yes. Balcony seats at the Civic. They're wonderful. They're now padded with cup holders and all the amenities there. And we also have some floor seats available as well if you prefer to sit on the floor at a table.
So any other activities between that concert and, of course, your famous Holiday Pops concert events going on?
Nothing in between there except a lot of planning and rehearsing. But we have a fabulous concert for the holidays coming up, and I'm sure I'll be back on to talk about that one. But we've got the high school choirs from LaPorte High School and Michigan City High School joining us for some really fun festive music. So we're really excited about that.
Excellent. And just maybe touch on some of the other things we can look forward to in the rest of the season.
Oh, sure. Yes. So in February, we have an Animal Kingdom concert. This is going to be special for families, and it's going to be at LaPorte High School. And we're going to play several pieces that are from the animal world. We're going to play Peter and the Wolf, which is a favorite of many, many people, and also Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals. So that's going to be really cool. We're really excited about that. We're going to have some little furry friends joining us as well. The Humane Society is going to be bringing some animals, and so we're going to have some pre-concert activities for that one as well. March, we've got an exciting classical concert, Schumann's First Symphony, some springtime-themed music, even though we well know March 9th will probably not feel very springy. We are we're going to
will it
to come. Yes, exactly, with some spring-themed music. And then in April, we've got our Spring Pops, which is going to be Some Enchanted Evening, a night of Rodgers and Hammerstein. So lots of wonderful music to look forward to this season.
Wow, what a schedule. And you know, having attended several of your concerts, it's just a wonderful orchestra. What a benefit for not only LaPorte County, but for all of Northwest Indiana.
Truly,
that you have.
Yes, we have some fabulous new players this season. We just held auditions for some open seats, and we have some really fantastic musicians joining us this season. So I think it's going to be just a really, really fabulous season with really high quality entertainment for the region.
Any opportunity for you to sing again?
Yes, I'm going to sing on the Rodgers and Hammerstein piece program. I'm super excited about that. As I say, all my musical theater dreams are coming true. I've mostly sung classical and Baroque music in my career, and now I get to branch out a little and sing some fun musical theater. So I'm excited about that.
Do you know what songs you're singing yet?
I think a few from Sound of Music. And I won't reveal the program just yet.
Okay.
But it's always been my dream to play Maria in Sound of Music. So
excellent. In our last few moments, tell us about the concert coming up on November 2nd.
Yes, November 2nd, Dia de los Muertos at the LaPorte Civic Auditorium. Doors open at 6 p.m. Concert begins at 7 p.m. Tickets are $25 for adults, $22 for seniors. Children and students with ID are free. And you can buy tickets at the door or online at lcso.net.
Thank you so much. That's Emily Yannis, Executive Director for the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra. Thank you for sharing on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Thank you.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Peter Marks, former theater critic of the Washington Post, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Scott P.J. McDonald to Art on the Air. After being away for a year, Scott has returned to Valparaiso and the role of executive director of the fabulous Memorial Opera House. He held that position from 2016 to 2023, and prior to that was the artistic director for the MOH in the years 2013 to 2016. Scott started as a volunteer in 2006. He also serves as treasurer for the American Association of Community Theater and as an advisory board member of the Northwest Indiana's Urban League. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Scott. It's so great seeing you again. You possess like the most fabulous smile in all of Northwest Indiana.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I credit my dentist for that, right?
Yes, keeping the teeth in the mouth. Well, welcome to Art in the Air. And what we always like to start with our guests is their origin story. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you're now. So tell us all about Scott.
Oh, boy. Okay, so I was born and raised in South Bend, and I lived there until we were about 11 years old, until I was about 11 years old, fifth grade. And then we moved from there to St. Louis, and then from St. Louis to Baltimore. And I started really kind of falling in love with the arts. You know, I had a little bit of experience as a kid. I think my first role was in kindergarten, you know, kindergarten graduation play, force everybody to be on stage. You know, it worked out. And then really kind of in that transition time between St. Louis and Baltimore is when I discovered speech and debate and public speaking, because I had a really terrible lisp. I found it like this when I talked. So through speech therapy and all of that, worked into speech and debate. Started to find out that, oh, hey, I can do this speech thing pretty well, and started doing some of the high school plays, all of that, musicals. By senior year, I was absolutely enamored with it. I went to Towson University for the arts, and then I took a break when I moved back to the Michigan area, actually. So moved to Southwest Michigan and wrapped things up through correspondence courses at Southwestern Michigan College, and then found my way to Valparaiso in 2007. Was performing with like the Dune Summer Theater, all of that in the early 2000s, 2007. Somebody called me and they were like, hey, I need an ensemble member for MAME, and I know that that's a hike for you, but would you be willing to do it? And I said, sure. So did MAME, and then got asked to be in Chicago Street Theater's production of The Wild Party, and more opportunities were coming up in Valparaiso to be involved with the arts than anywhere else. So I decided to plant myself in Valpo, volunteered off and on with the Opera House and Chicago Street Theater and a couple other theaters in Northwest Indiana. Worked with NEDF closely for a couple of years, and then in 2012 was offered the position of box office manager at the Opera House, and I was there until 2023 when, you know, I had an offer in North Carolina to go be a managing director at a theater there. I thought, you know what, why not? I'm at the right place in my career, and it's the right time in my life to give this a shot. We committed to a year. And then when the year was up, I was like, you know what? It's not home. And I was ready to come back here. Timing wise, some things worked out with the Opera House that I was able to just slide back into the role of executive director, sort of wrap up all the renovations. And here we are today. So that's the nutshell version.
Well, and that's what we like to hear. In your early theater things, did you have anything preference like musicals versus non-musicals, like during that early time, like in school, into college and such?
Sure. You know, I really did enjoy musicals as a kid. I think one thing that I absolutely love are like the old movie musicals, you know, the original MGM classics like Singing in the Rain and Hello, Dolly. And even, you know, it's not my favorite musical, but MAME with Lucille Ball. I really fell in love with some of those as a child. And then to sort of see the revival of it in my, you know, early 20s and all of that, I was like, yeah, this is really where I fit and where I belong. I enjoy straight plays just as well, but yeah, musicals have really always been a great device for storytelling as far as I'm concerned, because you do get that little bit of heightened emotion where people just burst out into song, you know, and that's a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, I do that in my regular life. I burst out in a song many times. Same. So,
you know, putting together furniture at the Opera House right now, all sorts of singing going on or something.
Yeah, Larry has a song for everything.
Yeah,
I get it. I get it.
I guess it's a occupational hazard having been involved in theater for 40 some years and everything. So,
yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It just kind of gets in there, right?
So you've seen the Opera House over a period of time. I remember back, I think, in the 90s when the previous mini renovation, I think I came over. I was at work at the Center for Visual Performing Arts, and I kind of did an unofficial kind of consulting. Well, this would be good to do. Some of the things, I don't think all those things got done, but I mean, I said, oh, well, you should do this, because they were really being more serious about what they want to do with it. So, but now this one was a much larger renovation. So we'll touch on that. Take it from where it was to now where it is now.
Sure. So in 2018, actually, I worked with Indiana DNR to receive a historical preservation grant. And what that did was it allowed us to hire an architectural firm to really come in and assess the Opera House and determine whether or not we could do any sort of renovations, because sometimes, you know, you look at these buildings that are over 100 years old and they scale them on a rate of like, you know, hey, don't do this too sure. We can absolutely make something work. And fortunately, you know, the Opera House had really, really solid bones, very, very solid structure. I think it was in like the 90th percentile of their scaling as far as feasibility went. So we really started working through the process of how are we going to make this work. We were working closely with the county commissioners and county council, and we started to find some designs that we really liked. Sort of the same thing as you were talking about, Larry, you know, where we're like, hey, this would be really, really great, and started sort of parsing those wants versus needs and what would make the Opera House more comfortable, particularly for patrons, but also for our volunteers, because you know, the patrons come and spend a great deal of time, but so do our volunteers. So we wanted to make sure we had as many creature comforts as possible and safety and, you know, that the building would continue for generations to come. So we really worked hard on that from 2018 till the end of 2019. I think we all know what happened in 2020. And so that things kind of got put on pause. You know, the arts really did kind of become a back burner issue, unfortunately. I don't think just community-wide, but I think nationwide, that sort of was the situation, because we were the first to shut down and the last to fully reopen. So by 2021, we were working with new commissioners and sort of starting the process over again as far as wants and needs. Now we were also taking into consideration, we had just come out of a global pandemic, so what other safety needs did we have for the building? So it sort of changed and shifted the design process. And then the American Rescue Plan came along, and that helped with funding the project, fortunately. So that really was a boon for us, that $5 million was put aside by the county to make sure that this was something that did happen, because it really was a matter not only of making sure that the building was there for generations to come, but it was really a public safety issue at that point. You know, we needed brand new HVAC in the building, all the mechanicals and plumbing needed work. And that is probably the bulk of what that money went into, is the stuff that people really don't see, that I would say is not the sexy stuff. But you have to have fresh air coming into the building, and you have to have all of these, you know, filtration systems and all of that to keep our patrons and volunteers as safe as possible. So by the middle of 2022, 2023, we really were starting to zero in on some of this. And it got pushed through last summer in 2023 after I had already taken off to North Carolina. And work started in April, end of April of this year, and is just now finishing up. Like I said, you know, a little bit earlier in our prelim, we're really just kind of wrapping up some of the HVAC stuff, because that is the stuff that, while it was the most needed, is also the most complex. And I think our last thing that's happening is new windows are going in next month, in November. So we're really, really excited about all of it.
It's very exciting. Yeah. But you know what? I want to take you back to that five-year-old boy who had that acting experience. So after that, Did the schools you go to and your family, did they nurture that in you? And so my ultimate question is going to be, are you going to seize opportunities to continue acting? Will you have the time and opportunity to do that? Are you going to do that? So, sure, but I do want to hear about, you know, the whole process of your, you know, acting. Because I think I read that, you know, you told your parents, I want to be an actor. And like most parents, they say, oh, that's really nice, but you better have a real job.
100%. Absolutely. So, you know, as far as schools and parents went, I think they nurtured in their own way, you know, and ultimately it was probably my safety or whatever they wanted to keep at the forefront, right? And make a priority. So yeah, it was that sort of thing where I was like, I want to be an actor. I want to be a director. And okay, great kid. That's great. But make sure you have a real, real job lined up. And so, you know, I found ways to get myself into performances and all that, but also to get myself into a lot of trouble, if we're going to be really honest. You know, on report cards, he talks a lot in class. He is always outgoing, that sort of thing. So
did the school have a theater program though? Like high schools usually
the high schools that I went to did, but elementary school, not so much.
Christmas things, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Christmas things, graduation things, choir, all of that.
Sure.
So, you know, you figure those things out and make it work. But high school really, really did fall in love with it. And like I said, the speech and debate program really helped me kind of get over some of the things that I was dealing with in speech therapy, right? Because that was another thing is like, how are you going to be an actor and you sound like this all the time? Well, you know, it worked for plenty of other people. So why not? So sure. I mean, I think there was nurturing in its own way, but I think a lot of it was, to use a phrase that I think might be a little bit overused, pulling myself up by my bootstraps and saying, I can really do this.
Well, you have to have that deep desire that absolutely gives you that, you know, impetus.
Absolutely. And will I seize opportunities to perform? Sure. If they're available to me and if I have the time. And, you know, I'm in that middle-aged category right now where it's interesting because there's not a whole lot of really exciting roles that I want to do. It's that weird, like, I'm not 18 and I can't play 18 anymore, unless we're doing like the geriatric version of Grease. And I'm not the wizened old dude yet. So really trying to find those things that really speak to me that I want to do. Is kind of,
well, that's exciting though, you know.
Absolutely. And you know, I love directing. I think that that's really where I find a lot of passion, is being able to tell the story and working with a group to tell the story and say, hey, how do we pull this thing apart? And yeah, we're bursting out into song, but why are we bursting out into song right now? And what do we want to, you know, what do we want to get across to the audience? That's the stuff that really jazzes me.
Yeah, because directing is sort of like mentoring, because you really see something that the person doesn't necessarily see in themselves, and it's really pull it out. Yeah,
it's consultation and coaching, and you know, those are things that I absolutely love to do. And you know, really getting to have some of those discussions with performers and say, "Hey, how do you feel about trying this?" And like, yeah, sure, or no, and you know, really kind of working through all of that. I do love that. So.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask a little bit more, and you kind of answered part of it, but your directing process, because you were artistic director before you became executive director. And
correct.
So I think you kind of answered this, that even now you have opportunities possibly to decide, hey, I'm going to direct this particular show here, because, you know, that way you have control. But, you know, when you're working through as a director, now everyone has, I've worked with directors who are very, I almost choreograph every single move of everyone on stage. You know, has to be here doing that. I come from a loose blocking thing where there are certain points I need you to be, but like, yes. You know, so what's your style of directing when you approach, especially with a musical?
It's really that same thing, Larry. It's just kind of that loose, you know, hey, and especially when it's a book musical, you know, a narrative style, hey, this is where we need you to get from A to B, And now the choreographer is going to work with you on movement of, you know, this big dance number. So I'm very, very collaborative. I'm very collaborative with my performers, too, because I do ask the question a lot. Why are you doing that? And how do you feel about this? Before we, you know, even put it on the boards, just, you know, what's your feeling here? What do you think this character's feeling? Because I think, you know, as we've all heard our entire lives, acting is being. So you want it to be as realistic as possible because, you know, sure, there's those points in musicals where it's like, okay, this is obviously a setup, but it's engaging for an audience when they're like, Right. Oh, I can totally relate to this character, even if she is, you know, the witch in Into the Woods or something along those lines. I can relate to the way she's feeling right now. So, you know, just working through that process is a lot of it, the emotional, what drives these characters.
Yeah. And some of your favorite shows, what is something you're both musical and non-musical? What are some of them that, oh, I just absolutely love this show. And yeah, maybe sure. On the other side of that, I really don't like this one.
I think like a lot of directors and performers, I'm a Sondheim junkie. You know, I think one of my favorite experiences as a director actually was 2014. We did Company at the Opera House, and that cast was like, I say it's lightning in a bottle. You know, it was just one of those things, like, it was fun. There wasn't a whole lot of drama or personality or anything like that. Everybody really loved each other. And that came across on stage, right? And, you know, when we can tech through a show and we're like, okay, we're doing Q to Q and we just whip through it and it's just, we're laughing the entire time and having fun. That's what, you know, theater at its core is to me. I think that was one of my favorite experiences and probably one of my favorite shows. I'm a Sondheim freak. So give me Company, give me A Little Night Music, give me Sweeney Todd, give me all of those. I also like, you know, like I said, I love the old classics. You know, we're doing Singing in the Rain in 2025 as our season opener, and I'm very, very excited about that. As far as straight plays, you know, I lean into like the classics. I love Tennessee Williams. I like Noel Coward, you know, Blithe Spirit's probably one of my favorite scripts, and Private Lives. I think that those shows are hilarious because they're timely even now. You know, they're written in the style of 1930s, 1940s, sure, but we all have relationships and we all have things and we all have stories to tell. As far as things that I don't like, there's really not very much that I, you know, am just like, I mean, there's a few shows that I think probably came out in like the late 90s, early 2000s, where I don't know what the hell was going on in the arts world. But, you know, I'm just like, okay, do we need to produce Bat Boy? Right. Shows like that, you know, I'm just like, I can take it or leave it. But again, they have their place in the canon. But, you know, I love a good story about a flop as much as the next person too. let's see what we can do to make it fun. So that's me.
So Scott, how involved are you with the youth program and the camps?
Sure. So I'm really involved more from just the oversight perspective. We have a very, very talented education director, Jonathan Owens. He just wrapped up as the monster in Young Frankenstein, actually. You wouldn't know that, you know, from that performance that he absolutely adores kids, right? and his heart is just as big as he is. But he works for Boys and Girls Club. He's overseen our education program. He and another young woman, Alexandria Ingram, oversee the Penguin Project, which is our program for students with disabilities. So really, I serve more advisory with them and just making sure that things stay on track. I do pop in and, you know, work with our parents group and all of that just to make sure that, you know, everything keeps moving and all the trains leave the station on time. But besides that, I just work really, really hard to keep it funded because I really believe in youth theater. And, you know, there has to be another generation coming up because unfortunately, I can't stay executive director forever. I tried to leave once and look how that turned out. so, you know, we need to make sure that we're doing some good succession planning too, right? And that means finding people that are passionate about it, like I was when I was a kid, that can be molded to be our next group of leaders. So that's important to me, and I will always work to make sure that that happens for those kids.
Yeah, it's really important, especially with all the, I mean, like movies have become so fantastical and we all have our devices. And so to really get physical with it is important. And to do that, they need to have examples.
Yeah. And, you know, you see things on stage that happen in the moment and that aren't edited. Right. You know, I always say that. I'm like, yeah, movies are great and they're amazing and I love them. But you have to remember there's a process that goes into that 1 minute of film that they're spending about, you know, 60 minutes to make sure that it actually happens. And then, you know, the editing time and all of that, we don't get that luxury, you know, it lives
immediate.
In that moment. Right. So
I heard a comment about The Wizard of Oz, the motion picture, is that it combined motion picture magic and good old-fashioned stagecraft. Glinda coming down in the bubble, you know, that was very movie magic. But the witch dissolving, that's stagecraft. You know, that really was. It was. So, hey, in our last few minutes here, tell us about some of the things that are, you know, obviously you talked about the HVCA and all that, but things that you want to finish in the renovation that maybe are not quite done, but there. I know if it's like lighting or any other types of things. And just some of that.
Yeah, we're still learning how the building functions. So it's really a matter of, you know, making sure that we're getting the right lighting temperature in the lobby and all of that. And there's still some rewiring that has to happen with that. You know, we've had some things where it's like, oh, hey, we don't want the light board to be able to control the lights in the bathroom in the middle of the show. So it's, you know, you're moving back into your house and it's all brand new. So getting some of those things, the fine tuning is happening now. And I think that as long as our patrons and volunteers are patient with us, and as we're figuring it all out, it's going to be a really, really great experience for everybody. You know, as far as the lighting systems go, all of it is brand new, and it's not only brand new to the theater, it's brand new to us. And, you know, Scott Miller and I, our technical director, we've been at the theater for years and we're still looking at things going, oh, this is how this works now. So just figuring those things out. And I think that's just something that takes time.
Well, in our last moments here, tell us about some of the things you have, plans you have coming up for the season. You know, we're in here, this is mid-late October, but some of your plans of what's coming up.
Sure. So we are in rehearsals for Scrooge the Musical right now. That opens up Thanksgiving weekend and runs through the middle of December. And then we are getting ready to start auditions for Singing in the Rain, which is our first show of 2025. We will also be doing Forever Plaid in 2025. We will be doing Oliver with our Limelight's Kids and The Music Man with our Penguins. And then Rocky Horror next fall. And wrapping everything up next year with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So we've just launched our 2025 season. We're very, very excited.
Wow. What a lineup.
It's a great lineup and it's going to be a lot of fun. And then, you know, just trying to figure out plugging in concerts and other things. But we're very, very excited about it. And, you know, of course, wrapping this season up with Scrooge and, you know, Holiday Pops and all of those good things that we always do every year. So we're very, very excited and grateful to be able to do it.
That's great. Well, we didn't ask the question, but that's Scott P.J. McDonald, the new executive director, new again at the Memorial Opera House. And they do have some other concerts coming up November 2nd. We have Michael McDermott. We have one for a spotlight interview, Ultimate Doors, and a few other things, Veterans Day concert and things like that. Scott, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your arts and theater journey.
My pleasure. Always a good time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Morgan McCabe, freelance theater professional and writer for the Northwest Indiana Times. You are listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. Thanks for listening.
We are glad to welcome Deanne Stover to Art on the Air. Deanne is the newly appointed artistic director for the Toll Theater in Hammond, Indiana. Prior, he was the artistic director of the Myers Dinner Theater in Hillsboro, Indiana. Deanne has had a long time career as a performer in regional and national theaters and rounded that out by teaching theater at the University of Arts and Sciences of Oklahoma. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. It's very nice meeting you.
It's nice meeting you. Thank you for having me.
And Deanne, glad to have you on the show. Glad I get to meet you at the arts luncheon that they had. And just real quickly, we got to say hi there. But really what we want to do is get to really know you. And I always like to say your origin story. So tell us how you got from where you were to where you are now.
It always sounds like origin story. It sounds like some villain that's going to, you know, resurface. Actually, well,
is
I
it?
grew No, I hope not. Well, you know, when you're the boss of something, people often think you are the villain. So, actually, I grew up in Elk Grove Village, Illinois, which is a suburb, western suburb of Chicago. I was born there. I grew up in Roselle, which is right next to Schaumburg, for those people, Schaumburg a little bit better. And I attended a grade school there and watched my first play was in third grade. I remember this group of actors came in and I watched them up on the stage and I thought, that's what I want to do with my life. Little did I know it would translate to the other side of being an artistic director, but I'm glad it did.
That's just sort of a natural branching out from acting.
Right, right. I mean, I'm sure everybody has their story of how, you know, they watched something or saw someone that inspired them, and that's what inspired me. And then I thought, I didn't get the courage to actually go and do it until like eighth grade. So in eighth grade, I actually got the courage to go ahead and do a play. Unfortunately, I was hit by a car.
I ended up in a
back brace, but it actually worked out for the character because he was supposed to be this very stern captain, very, you know, military, good posture. So it worked out because I was in a back brace. But you know what? For your first time being on stage, it was wonderful because I got entrance applause. I'm sure. I mean, obviously, it was for pity from being hit by a car. But
what play was it?
It was actually a very obscure play. I don't even know if anybody knows it. I don't even remember the title other than it took place on Go Bananas Airlines.
Oh.
So if anybody knows that play, please let me know. I don't remember exactly. I remember I played this captain who was not he's a very uptight type of person, but it worked out.
Well, that's quite a dramatic entrance.
Right. For your first time being on stage and then you get a standing ovation. So that was kind of nice. I guess that's what really, you know, the bug that really bit me was hearing those applause. From there, I did a little bit of acting in high school. And then I went back and forth between deciding whether I wanted to be a psychologist or if I wanted to pursue a career in the arts. And the more I started off being a psychologist and taking every psychology course I could, of course, you learn so much self in those courses. I began to realize do that for the rest of my life. I had too many emotions to get out, and listening to those emotions, I think I'm a little bit more empath. So I take on other people's emotions, and I think that would destroy me.
It'd be exhausting.
Other people. Yeah. I decided to go the other route, went to Columbia College and their wonderful musical theater program, and was taught by Mandy Patinkin's cousin, Sheldon Patinkin. He has since had a wonderful experience, very hard experience. I think sometimes our educators are the hardest on us the most. Definitely thought all my instructors hated me, but they were all professionals working in Chicago or they had worked on Broadway and really respected them. And, I'd come home some days crying, I would tell my mom, I was like this, you know, they hate me. They think I'm terrible. And it wasn't until, our senior recital where I was playing Will Parker and the instructors who Stel Spector, who was a wonderful woman. She was very hard on me and she came up to my mother while I was standing there and said, "Isn't he wonderful?" And I thought, who is this woman? Who is she? You know? And my mom said, "I thought you said she hated you." I'm like, "She does. She's terrible to me every day." But in the end, she said, "I knew you could do it. That's why I was the hardest on you, because I knew this was a career that you could actually pursue." So it would be nice to know that while you're doing it.
I know. It seems so counterintuitive.
Right. Right. But I think that's often with many people. They think, being hard on someone is the best way to go, which it can be. But you also have to give some encouragement along the way, I think. So, when I began teaching at the University of Science and Arts of Oklahoma, which kind of happened as a fluke because I was on a national tour performing. We had stopped off in Oklahoma. She's like, "Hey, do you want to come with me to my, alma mater?" And I'm like, "Sure," and started talking with the theater. And then he's like, "Well, would you guys want to come back and do a workshop sometime with the students? So we did that. It was very successful and well received. So then he was like, hey, why don't you become an adjunct here and start teaching? So when I wasn't performing, I would then go back and give back and work with the kids. And it was very rewarding to be able to go and share my knowledge with them and how they can get into the arts and perform and do it professionally and try to give back the way I would have wanted to have been taught, you know. So so that was very rewarding. Especially hearing, I'm still hearing from some now. They're like, hey, you told us to do, should I do this at an audition? So, you know, it's, I think it's full circle, I think, in life, you know, so.
Right.
Yeah, it was really great.
I know, my directing experience is to, I prefer to lift people's spirits to the task and not really berate them. And one of the things I do when I would give notes, I always gave the notes to the character name, not them. You know, when we were doing notes and all that, I said, now, Juliet, you need to do da, 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 da. And I thought it made it less personal and put it within the context of play. And of course, I never give negative notes in front of everyone else. There's a really negative note, which very seldom happened. That would always be, you know, one-on-one.
Yeah.
I thought that's a much better thing. You know, and you tell me this story about her being hard on you that everything. I think, oh, no, that's not the way to do that. You know, you can raise the bar different ways. So,
yeah. Yeah, well, everybody teaches differently, I guess. I kind of understood the method, but I think there needed to be a little bit of balance. Like anything in life, I think you need a little bit of balance. And I think that's the way I direct, too, is first of all, I tell the actors before I begin notes, I'd be like, a lot of this sounds, but it's because I don't have to write down all the positive things that all you do. I think all of you are wonderful, you know, any wonderful things, but we don't have to. It's for me to give you all the wonderful things. So know that I think you're wonderful. These are just things I want to fix.
Right.
You know, so that they know that.
As long as you preface it, you know, and it has that context. Yeah.
Yeah. So that way they know, I'm doing a lot of good things too. Yeah. Yeah. Understand the thing about using the character's name, because I often do that too. Sometimes I flip back and forth because I will say the character name and then be like, well, also you know, I don't want them to think that I don't think of them as a person either. So
no.
So I kind of flip back and forth.
Yeah, that's good. I always think too, notes after 20 minutes, you're done.
Yeah.
And a technique that's I did, especially in our larger shows is, where, especially in musicals where I'd had notes maybe from my music person and things like that, we do that. And that, but if there's any other notes, we would then send an email out with a summary and say, okay, here's some of the more details that we wanted to cover. And that was a lot. That way you're not wasting time after a rehearsal, and especially working with students that have maybe other agenda things. So that's great. So
Yeah. Some notes I want to give personally just so that I know that they're understanding what I'm meaning.
Right.
But yeah, sometimes I do just send it out as an email because it does save time. But yeah, there are certain things where I'm like, I need to actually physically show you on stage where I want you to move, or, you know, especially if it's been more than one time being the note. But
just for your resume, by the way, that's a Tim Kelly play called Airline that you were in. I just looked it up.
It's called Airline. Okay. Yeah.
And it's one of those that, you know, Tim Kelly writes a lot of things for Pioneer Drama Service that are for young people. And it's obvious that it was. It's like, I think 12 men, 12 female. And you can then do so it's one of those, you know, mass productions that Tim Kelly did. Yeah, he's put those out. So that way you can add that to your resume somewhere down at the bottom. By the way, my stage debut was on Airline.
It'll be part of my origin story.
Well, yeah, it is. So doing your acting and your acting career, tell us some of your favorite roles and plays.
Oh, so many. Several music directors sometimes when we start the first day rehearsal, they go, I want everybody to tell me what your favorite musical is that you've ever been in. And I was like, no, it's like asking you what's your favorite child.
Right.
But I can tell you several roles. Unexpected role that I didn't think that I would enjoy as much as I did, and to this day is a show I think every actor should do just because of the craziness of the fans. Because, you know, we all hear stories about like Rented sitting outside theaters and, you know, sitting down for overnight to get tickets and things like that. But I have to tell you, I wasn't expecting to do this show. I had a friend, we had done Oklahoma together. And she called me out of the blue years later and said, hey, directing a production of Rocky Horror, audition everyone in the Quad Cities. I cannot find a Frankenfurter. Would you want to do it? And I thought, what in Oklahoma hell made you think of me? But she said, I know you can do it. My music director just needs to hear a little bit of you singing from the show. So can you send me a clip if you want to do it? And I thought about it, and I was like, I never thought of myself being in women's lingerie. So I did it, and I went full out. I did the makeup. I, you know, got a bustier. I sang the clip for the music director, and 20 minutes later, she texted me and said, he watched it. You love the role. Really? And I have to tell you, though, I have performed Fox Theater, some very famous theaters, the Fox Theater in St. Louis, the in Connecticut, and, you know, performed for 4,000 people before. Fans of Rocky Horror do not compare, like 4,000 people applauding is nothing compared to the people who scream for you. And I didn't know this until the woman playing Magenta said to me before we opened, you wait until that music starts for you. They lose their minds. And I thought, whatever, you know, I'm nobody. But hearing them scream for me, I got scared for the first time. Like, there's a being nervous and being scared. I was scared because it was like the screaming was like the Beatles or Michael.
Can I live up to this?
Right. I'm like, this is, not, you know, but that's how they are. The fans are crazy. So that's a show that I definitely didn't. I loved it. I loved every minute of it. And I told every actor they should probably do that show, whether you think you should or not, because I didn't think I should. But it was wonderful.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
Well, hop on the main genre of musicals, because that came, you know, as a film first that was converted to a play. So,
yeah.
So, like, any other musicals or plays that were you like more from more traditional theater?
Yeah. Well, the most traditional, Rodgers and Hammerstein, of course. I have the pleasure of playing Will Parker twice. Luckily, an actor friend of mine, Mike Zygo, who was one of the original founding, or one of the original members of the Broadway cast of Once, we had done the Full Monty together and had done a tour of that, and he taught me Crow. So I was able to incorporate into Oklahoma, which was fun. Then, you know, that's been a great skill, not only for my resume, but also recently I did a production of 9 to 5 playing Mr. Hart, which Dolly Parton's music is wonderful. I love playing Mr. Hart. He's a terrible person, but I loved playing the role. And, you know, playing villains is always the best role in the show, in my opinion. But I was able to use those skills in that show as well, in the fantasy sequence where Dorley, you know, ropes him up and ties him up and everything. So both those shows were great experiences, not only from the skills I learned. And, you know, that's the thing I used to impart to my students too, was that you never stop learning. Like, don't think you know everything, you know, because I feel like you have to learn every day. As someone said once, you learn what not to do. You're still, and I think it was Laurence Olivier who said at one point that the moment you think you know everything, you're no longer learning. You are no longer a good actor. You become a bad actor.
Right.
Which I think is true.
Right. Because it's so much about observation and.
Right. Well, and listening and you know, if you think you know everything, you're not really listening to the other person. Sure. You know, I mean, listening is the most important part of it is in life. You know, I mean, even in life, though, I mean, there's people who don't listen, but that needs to be a choice. You know, that needs to be a choice of the character, not the actor not listening, you know.
So, right. So now tell us about you moving from acting to directing, and I know you've had an overlap in your career for that, but tell us about some of that, what you like to direct and everything, and then we'll move on to your movement to Toll.
Yeah, actually, that was one of the things that I was talking about, Emily, during my interview for Toll, was about the directing aspect of it. You know, an artistic director job, many people think that, oh, the artistic director directs everything. Well, that's not true, because I don't think anyone should direct everything.
No.
For one, a story has to speak to me. And my first thought in the process is, you know, am I going to serve the story when I'm directing something? So if I'm not going to serve the story, obviously I shouldn't do it. I enjoy a good musical, but should I direct it? Probably, because it's not, you know, the story isn't there for me. Like most jukebox musicals, sleep fluff and music's fun, which is what why people go, you know, like Mamma Mia. It's not a well-written show, but the music is wonderful and people want to go and listen to the music. So that's not my type of show. You know, my show has to speak to me and be able to tell it. And oftentimes it's, you know, it's a piece of comedy, or it could be, you know, it could be a dramatic piece. Oftentimes my favorite type of shows are direct are those that both.
Right.
That you're, you know, right. You're able to, you know, there's a line from Steel Magnolias, which is so true to me. It speaks to me as, you know, laughter through tears is one of my favorite emotions. And if I can get a good story that does both for me, where, I mean, if you have ever laughed while you're crying about the dramatic piece, yeah, then you're, you know, I think it's the best of everything for the audience member to, you know, be able to escape and enjoy that.
I know I had the same feeling about jukebox musicals, is they're very commercial, and that's why they're doing it. And, you know, it's tough to put a show up like, well, commercially, but even like on Broadway, but they will sell tickets because people want to see it. And the fact that they cobbled together some sort of story around it is something. And that's actually a throwback to the musicals prior to book musicals. I mean, that's how they did it. They got a collection of songs, and then they would create a story, stop the story, do the song or dance, and then continue the story. So it's kind of actually a throwback to the pre-book, what I call the, like, the what Rodgers and Hammerstein established was a true storyline musical where the music emanated from it. So.
Correct. Yeah. I just wish they flush out that story a little bit.
Well, yeah. So tell us about how you talked briefly about Emily interviewing you for The Toll, but how your connection to The Toll and how you got there. And then also we'll move on to like what season you have. And I understand about artistic director. Actually, an artistic director is actually more of a producer than they are actually directing per se. So, yeah, they are. Or like,
yeah, because, yeah, they're basically the vision of the theater. They're putting all the pieces in place. It's like doing a jigsaw puzzle. I say, you know, you put all the, your job is to put all the pieces in place, and hopefully it turns out to be this beautiful thing.
Right. They're kind of the equivalent in motion pictures and television of the executive producer in terms right. of that. So anyway, tell us about how you came across Toll and everything. And then, you know, what your season's going to be.
So actually it was very interesting. So actually an actor named Danny Hollander from Chicago worked for me at Myers Dinner Theater, and he did a couple years of several productions with me. And I wasn't actually looking for another job. He just wrote me. He's like, I know you're from Chicago. You know, the Hammond's a little closer to Chicago. You know, here's a posting for the Toll Theater. And, you know, it seems like it'd be a good fit for you. So I applied. My first interview with Emily lasted 2.5 hours because we both couldn't shut up. And it just flowed very natural. And, you know, at my second interview, I hugged her goodbye because I felt like she was a friend, you know, at that point. So, yeah, so it was just, it felt very easy and comfortable and natural. And so it seemed like a great fit. And Emily, you know, a week later, I don't even know if it was a week, but she sent me an email with an offer letter. And that's how I ended up there. And we're trying to kick off this next season for 2020. And we are opening with ones February 28th, which is a musical. And many of the young actors really love that show. The women, actually, because there's some great women in that show. Following that is a show called POTUS. Which runs in May. And then we are doing the musical Superhero, which is in July, and which is all musical that was actually workshopped, I believe, with Kate Baldwin, Kelly O'Hara at one point. And then we're doing a play called Holmes and Miss Watson, a kind of take off of Holmes and Watson, with women, which is a very funny, fun show. And then we'll round with the holiday show, which we haven't announced yet. hopefully we'll get that secured once it's approved by the board and all our fundraisers as well for the year, because, you know, there's no money in arts, so we're trying to raise money as we can.
Now, are you still doing this coming November, December, A Fabulous 50s Christmas, which has been, is that still on the game? Okay.
Yeah, so that will open at the end of November, right after Thanksgiving. The current artistic director, Jeff Casey, and Kevin Bellamy are working on that show, which is a very difficult show to put together because it's basically creating a show. It's not just having it handed to you. So they kind of create that every year, and it's been a favorite for people. So, yeah, that should be a great show. Some wonderful tap dancing and all kinds of stuff in that show.
So you had a chance to interface with Jeff and Kevin, so who've basically established the toll, and then they're moving on to Portugal. So there's kind of like they're going to take you up in the airplanes. This is the ailerons. Here's the rudder. We're jumping out. It's your plane now. So
that's right. And they are actually in Portugal right now. So it's going to transfer over soon. So yeah, I'm just absorbing everything right now and planning for the new season.
Sounds great. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. That's Jan Stover, the brand new artistic director for the Toll Theater. Found out information online at Toll Theater and see their entire season. They also have packages available, and they also display artwork. Jan, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air.
Yeah, have an exciting time. Thank you.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art in the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell it to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.